All right, how's everybody doing? Hotep, hey, this is Michael M. Hotep, founder of the African History Network, host of the African History Network show. I'm a talk show host, researcher, lecturer, and writer. It is Friday, April 5th, 2019, and we made it through another week. Hope everybody's doing well. It's been a crazy week. A lot of people have been talking about the killing of Nipsey Hussle. A lot of people have been talking about Trump and the border. Taxes, all different types of things, right? Unemployment numbers came out today as well. So you follow the articles we post on our Facebook fan page, the African History Network. So I wanted to talk about this story. I did not see a lot of coverage of this, and this article came out April 2nd, which was a Tuesday, April 2nd, 2019. And we know April 2nd was Women's Equal Pay Day, okay? That was National Equal Pay Day for women. And it largely focuses on white women, okay? And I was traveling back from Baltimore. I was speaking at the Baltimore Natural Hair Care Expo March 30th and 31st, so I didn't have a chance to talk about this story. I have talked about Black Women's Equal Pay Day in the past, for the past going back to about 2015, 2016. I've been talking about Black Women's Equal Pay Day, okay? So I wanted to deal with this topic here because BlackEnterprise.com has a good article, Black Women Can't Wait 106 Years for Equal Pay. Black Women Can't Wait 106 Years for Equal Pay. All right. So how's everybody doing? Share this broadcast on your Facebook page. Invite your friends to tune in. Also, let me pin the topic here also. And then African-American business owners, post the name of your business here on the thread of the broadcast. OK, African-American business owners, post the name of your business here on the thread of the broadcast also. And email us at customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We'll let you know how you can advertise with the African History Network, as well as African American business owners especially. All right, so National Equal Pay Day deals with how long it takes the average woman to make the same amount of money that the average white male made the previous year, okay, the previous 12 months. So it took until April 2nd of 2019 for the average woman to make the same amount of money that the average white male made the previous 12 months. So it takes on average 16 months. But that's basically looking at women on average. When it comes to African American women, we know that it takes African American women on average 20 months to make the same amount of money that it takes the average white male to make. So in 2018, that fell on August 7th. August 7th, 2018. Was Black Women's Equal Pay Day. Black Women's Equal Pay Day, all right? And, you know, when I spoke in San Diego back in August of 2018 for Return of the Gods, Herb Alchemist and Kateria Knows invited me. I was an honoree there. This is one of the things that I talked about in my presentation. So if we look at this article from BlackEnterprise.com by Lydia Blanco, April 2nd, 2019. Black women can't wait 106 years for equal pay. It talks about how, according to research conducted by the Institute for Women's Research Policy, if trends in the pay gap persist, like they have over the last 30 years, African American women will have to continue to work hard until the year, get this, until the year 2124, until the year 2124, just to receive equal pay. If the trends from the past 30 years persist, African American women will have to work until the year 2124 just to receive equal pay, okay? All right, so in the article from Black Enterprise, they spoke with Teresa C. Younger, president and CEO of Miss Foundation, MS, period, Miss Foundation, about closing the pay gap and how women can preserve persevere as they work toward equal pay. And she gave a number of different suggestions. They asked, what does closing the pay gap mean for women beyond the dollar signs? We know that the majority of African-American households are headed by a single mother. So when we talk about closing the pay gap, I mean, this has huge impact to the African-American community. When we talk about things like the fight for $15 an hour, okay, that will drastically, disproportionately, positively impact African-American women and African-American families. Okay, now we know you're not going to get rich working $15 an hour, but if you're making $10 an hour, $11 an hour, and you get bumped up to $15 an hour, that positively, disproportionately impacts African-American women. AtlantaBlackStar.com had an article from either 2015, 2016 dealing with Black Women's Equal Pay Day. And they talked about how in five states in the U.S., the pay gap over the working lifetime of an African-American woman is $1 million or more that they lose over their working lifetime from age 18 to about 65 because of this pay gap. If we look at the article from Vox.com, and we'll come back to this article in a minute here. If we look at the article from Vox.com entitled Tuesday is Black Women's Equal Pay Day, here is what you should know about the gap. Now, this is from August 7th, 2018, which was Black Women's Equal Pay Day in 2018. I've talked about this on my radio show. This is something I've been dealing with each year going back to about 2015 or so. We've posted articles dealing with Black Women's Equal Pay Day, etc. Okay, so this is not something that I just discovered. And when I was in San Diego back in August at Return to Gods, this is something that I talked about as well. But the National Women's Law Center notes that this pay gap can begin to widen over the course of an African-American woman's career, causing her to lose nearly $870,000 in potential earnings to the wage gap, okay? $870,000 in potential earnings in the wage gap. This is what the average African-American woman loses over the course of her working lifetime. In about five states, going back to either 2015 or 2016, in five states, that pay gap was $1 million or more. Now, in several states, the wage gap can be even bigger. In Louisiana, for example, Black women make less than half of white men can make. Okay, so right now, African-American women make on average 63 cents for every $1 that the average white male makes. But in Louisiana, is less than 50 cents. Okay, so this is huge. This impacts economics. This impacts the wealth gap. This impacts the quality of living. This impacts the zip code you live in. Will you be able to send your children to college? Will you have money to invest in real estate? Will you have money to, this reduces the amount of money that African-American women and African-American families have to start businesses, etc. So this has wide-ranging impact, okay? All right, how's everybody doing? Share this broadcast on your Facebook page. Invite your friends to tune in also. African-American business owners, post the name of your business here in the thread of the broadcast. And we also know African-American women are starting businesses at six times the national average. You heard me talk about this before. So post the name of your business here. You can email us at customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We'll let you know how you can advertise on the audio podcast of our radio shows that we do Sunday nights, the African History Network show. Been doing that show for 9 years, 3 years on 9:10 a.m. the Superstation, WFDF in Detroit. And then also we put your 30-second to 60-second commercial into the audio podcast of a podcast we do throughout the week, like these here, the ones I've done on Nipsey Hussle, etc. Okay, so email us at customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We have a special promotion right now. Get 3 months for the price of one. Okay, so let's go back to the first article from blackenterprise.com dealing with black women can't wait 106 years for equal pay, okay? And they spoke with Teresa C. Younger, president and CEO of Miss Foundation, about closing the pay gap. And they asked the question, what does closing the pay gap mean for women beyond dollar signs? Now, the pay gap is really about how we value women. The pay gap is really about how we value women, how we value African-American women. And in this country, we have continually undervalued women, particularly women of color and especially African-American women. So for us, and as a black woman, she said, this is how we place value on who we are and what we bring into our society. It's not just about the dollars and cents, even though it does make sense to properly value African-American women. Okay. Now, although it is about the dollars and cents, because if you can pay your bills, put some money in the bank and transfer that wealth to the next generation, then that's critical. And that helps to build what our society could look like. If we can start making sure that our women are paid for their worth in our society, it will show and reflect their value and help them uphold a level of self-confidence that they will carry into other aspects of their lives, all right? And once again, this is extremely important for African-American women. Number one, when we look at, say, college debt, African-American women carry more college debt than anybody else in this country, on average $30,000 when they leave college, okay? So when you have more college debt and you're making less, you're making 63 cents on the dollar that that the average white male makes, this compounds the financial problems. This compounds the wealth gap. And we know that this is all historical, okay? This comes out of a history of racism and white supremacy. We know this comes out of a maldistribution of scarce wealth, power, and resources. And this is what slavery did in this country. 246 years of slavery maldistributed the wealth, power, and resources into the hands of the dominant white society. So when we look at what racism is, racism has nothing to do with not liking people, calling people racial epithets, calling people the N-word. That's bigotry. Racism is a system of advantage and privilege distributed based upon race. Racism is a system of advantage and privilege distributed based upon race that comes out of the ideology of European white supremacy. Racism occurs when one race of people control the majority of the wealth, power, resources, benefits, privileges, land, access to education, access to opportunity, and they use that to marginalize, subordinate, and do harm to another race of people. Okay? And this deals with gaining access to jobs, access to loans from banks, dealing with hiring, all different types of things like this. All right? So if we look at an article from WashingtonPost.com from March 14th, 2019, just last month, okay? This article deals with how race impacts the wealth gap, how race impacts the wealth gap. And this is one of the reasons why the conversation about reparations is so important right now. And we know that you have some of the presidential candidates who are talking about their support for H.R. 40. We know that the Congressional Black Caucus has 55 members now. They have more power than ever before. We know that many members of the Congressional Black Caucus are pushing this. Representative Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas has championed H.R. 40, which was introduced back in 1989 by Representative John Conyers from right here in Detroit, where I live. Okay, so all of this is connected. All of this is tied together. And this is what 246 years of largely chattel slavery did. This is what decades of Jim Crow segregation did, the convict leasing system of 1865 to 1928, Jim Crow segregation, etc., discrimination when it comes to housing. This is the impact that this has. And the wealth gap is where the wealth gap and the discrepancy in the wealth gap, this is where we can largely see the impact of past public policies, past laws, etc. All of this was basically legal. When you had racial covenants, and when it came to housing and in the deeds that white people had, it stated that they could not sell that house to an African American. They could not sell that house to somebody black or somebody non-white. This largely locked African Americans out of home ownership. People should read this book, How White Folks Got So Rich, The Untold Story of American White Supremacy. How White Folks Got So Rich, The Untold Story of American White Supremacy. Okay, this is put out by the Nation of Islam Research Group. This is the third edition, and this deals with, this documents that whole history, okay? How's everybody doing? Now, if you like this information and the information we deal with here on the African History Network, you can also donate to the African History Network, paypal.me/the AHN show, paypal.me/the AHN show, or go to our website, africanhistorynetwork.com, africanhistorynetwork.com. That helps us to keep doing the research, stay on the air, keep broadcasting, finance the African History Network show, finance the research, pay the bills, etc. Okay, because a lot of people have been watching us for years. They know this is a lot of work and a lot of research. All right. Okay, let's continue here. How's everybody doing? All right. So when we look at this article from Washington Post, this is from March 14, 2019. They talk about how few data points more clearly illustrate how decades of discrimination affected African Americans than the racial wealth gap. As of 2016, the typical or average African-American family had a net worth of $17,000, roughly one-tenth of the $171,000 accumulated net worth of the average white family. And this is from federal research, okay? Economists tend to trace the staggering divide to the nation's long history of bigotry against its African-American citizens, starting with slavery. Now, this article is written by Christopher Ingram, okay? So he's a white male. I think he means well, but we ain't talking about bigotry largely. Bigotry is part of it when we deal with lynchings, things like this, but we're talking about racism. Racism is the power structure. Once again, racism is a system of advantage and privilege distributed based upon what, based upon race. This is what racism is. Okay, so in this whole conversation, and I need to segue into talking about reparations for just a minute, and we'll jump back on this, because all this is interconnected, interrelated. Okay, when we talk about reparations, and I posted an article from TheHeal.com on our Facebook fan page and my personal page yesterday, and this article is dealing with a increase in support of reparations. I think this was the article dealing with an increase in support of reparations among 2016 Democratic candidates, right? One of the things that I do, now this article I saw on, so this is from TheHeal.com, okay? And it's a political website. They deal with political news, TheHeal.com, all right? So what I did was I went and looked at some of the comments, because this was on The Hill's Facebook page. This article appeared on The Hill's Facebook page. I went and looked at some of the comments regarding this, and I'll give you the name of the article, okay? Most of the people commenting were white. Most of the comments they had about reparations were not positive. They had comments like, you know, I don't think there are any former slaves that live today, so why should I have to pay reparations? You know, it's a bunch of comments coming from a total misunderstanding of history. If you go and look at some of the broadcasts I've done, especially dealing with how today's schools are incorrectly teaching the history of slavery. When you look at the study from the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I just talked about this recently. I did a broadcast a couple of weeks ago, within the last couple of weeks, dealing with this. And I will try to talk about this on Sunday night show. But there was a article from, what was that? I think Vox.com, dealing with this topic. And the lack of understanding of history in this country among African Americans, but especially white people, the lack of understanding in the history of this country impacts the candidates that they support, and impacts who they vote for, impacts the policies that they support. And it ties also into a racial resentment. And this is the type of racial resentment that Trump has tapped into. And this is a racial resentment that African Americans are not deserving of what they have, or they're not deserving of what they are demanding. They're not deserving of policies that they are asking for, that they are demanding to help correct these racial inequities. Okay, it comes from a position that they're begging, or they feel entitled, etc. But when you look at the whole history of this country, you know, people attack affirmative action. Well, white people had affirmative action for 246 years. It was called slavery. Okay? When you look at the massive land distributions that took place in this country, I'm trying to find these articles here that I have. When you look at the massive land distributions that, or did I put it here, that took place in this country, okay, like the Homestead Act of 1862, which distributed about close to 250 million acres of land, and that almost exclusively went to white people. They distributed land for 100 years with the Homestead Act, okay? And the last claim was made in 1976. The last allotment was paid out about 1988. It was about 80 acres of land in Alaska. African Americans worked the land for 246 years largely for free. We were largely locked out of that massive land giveaway. You had the Southern Home. Now, 1862 is during the Civil War, by the way. You had the Southern Homestead Act of 1866, which gave away about 45 million acres of land in five states. We're largely locked out of that. This is the year after the Civil War ends. And we saw white peasants, white immigrants coming to this country right after the Civil War ends. We see them coming to this country, and we're seeing them given land, but we were locked out of those land, that land giveaway. We saw the Dawes Allotment Act of 1887, which gave away 138 million acres of land. It was supposed to go largely to Native Americans and Black Indians, okay? The black Indians who were part of those Native American nations, etc. Two-thirds of that land went to white people. This is how you got the $5 Indian, because white people found out about these land giveaways. They paid $5 to have their names added to the Dawes Rolls, R-O-L-L-S, which is kind of like a census. And it was stipulated that you had to anglicize your name. So white people were able to get their names added to that. You had to anglicize your name, make your name an English name. So John Smith or something like that, you know, Christopher Jackson or what have you, Christopher Washington, what have you. And when we look at these massive land giveaways like the Homestead Act, in this book, How White Folks Got So Rich, The Untold Story of American White Supremacy, they talk about how you have 400,000 to 600,000 white families that still have land today in their family from the Homestead Act, okay, of 1862. So we're talking about generational wealth, and we're talking about African Americans largely being locked out of that. Now, that wealth was not because, now, when we deal with the wealth disparities, right, it's not because we didn't know how to run a business. It's not because we didn't know how to invest. That's not why that racial disparity exists. Because the reason why the average white household has $171,000 in wealth compared to $17,000 for African Americans is not because they know how to run a business and not because they know how to invest. It's because of public policies. It's because of laws that were discriminatory against African Americans in this country, going back to 246 years of slavery. That's what this deals with. Okay, I'm all for investing. I'm all for investing in the stock market, having 401ks, and I'm all for that. But we have to understand this discrepancy did not exist because we didn't know how to run businesses. Because even at the height of economic empowerment in this country, when we own more businesses per 100,000 African Americans than we do today, going back to 1920, even at the height when we owned somewhere between 15 million to 20 million acres of land in 1920, and we had about 920,000, we owned about 920,000 farms, even at the height of economic empowerment in this country, the majority of African Americans were still poor and living in poverty. Okay? And it's because we were not compensated with land. We were not properly compensated coming out of slavery. This is what this is tied to. All right? So a people's history and culture teaches them how to deal with the problems of the past, in the present, and the future to meet the needs of the community. So this is why understanding this history is so important. And for us to get reparations, America needs a massive history lesson. Okay? Tying back into the article from thehill.com in the comments I was reading. And I responded to some of the comments because I could tell these bunch of dumbass people don't know what they're talking about, don't understand history. Okay, so I had to school them. But America needs a massive history lesson. The reason why is because the people advocating for reparations, most of them are not going to talk about the backlash that's going to come. Most of them are not going to talk about what happens if you're able to get the bill out of committee in the House of Representatives, and you have right-wing organizations who are taking out ads on TV telling their constituents to call their members of the House of Representatives and call their members of the U.S. Senate and to vote no on the reparations bill. Okay? What happens when they start holding up people like Herman Cain and African Americans who are Republicans and saying, well, you got this successful black person over here, and you got this successful black person over here, you got this black immigrant over here? Because I saw on Fox Business News, Roland Martin was debating this black immigrant who immigrated to the U.S. back in the 60s. And Roland is an advocate for reparations. This black immigrant is against reparations, and he was saying, I'm successful, you know, we don't need reparations, things like this. Well, hell, you don't even understand the history of African Americans here. I'm not against African immigrants, okay? I'm a Pan-Africanist. I'm not against African immigrants, okay? But this one right here was crazy. There are other African immigrants who are advocates of reparations for African Americans, all right? And we have to remember, Marcus Garvey was an immigrant also. From Jamaica, Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture was an immigrant from Trinidad. It's a lot of our heroes who we hold up who were immigrants. We know Malcolm X's mother, his mother, I think it was from Grenada, okay? So it's a lot of us, okay? We know Harry Belafonte is from the Caribbean. We know Sidney Poitier is from the Caribbean. So it's a lot of us in our history, those in the civil rights movement, it's a lot of us, a lot of African Americans, or who we classify as African Americans in our history, who have lineage that goes back to the Caribbean or goes back to Africa, for that matter. Okay, so there's going to have to be a massive history lesson, because Americans are ignorant about history. And the article from, and I can't find it now. I just saw it before I started broadcast. I'm not sure which file folder it's in, but the study, the 52-page study from the Southern Poverty Law Center, called "Teaching Hard History: American Slavery." Teaching Hard History: American Slavery. Everybody should download that. It's free to download. It deals with how the history of slavery is largely being mistaught in our schools. It deals with the wide-ranging ramifications that this has, including when African Americans are trying to get their issues met and correct harmful public policies that were put into place, the backlash that you get from that because people are ignorant of history, okay? So it's at the Southern Poverty Law Center's website, splcenter.org, splcenter.org, Teaching Hard History, American Slavery. And they did a survey of 1,000 high school seniors across the country, 1,000 12th graders, and they found that only 8% knew that slavery was the central cause or the central reason that the Civil War was fought. Okay, out of 8,000, out of 1,000, only 8% knew that the central reason why the Civil War was fought was because of slavery. Okay, it wasn't states' rights. That's that revisionist history. Okay, let me try to find this. I know I got this. I know I have this stack of articles here. That's not it. That's another one dealing with how we went from 15 million acres of land down to 1 million acres of land, and that deals with the plight of black farmers. Okay, just give me a minute here because I saw this. I don't know where the hell I put it. That's so many articles. All right. But you all have heard me talk about that before, dealing with the study from the Southern Poverty Law Center. And I don't know where the hell I put those articles. I just saw them. But anyway, let's continue. All right, anyway. But it's interesting when I see articles dealing with reparations, and this is from a white publication, thehill.com. I encourage you go if you want to understand the uphill battle we have. And I'm not saying we should not engage in the battle. Now, we should not put all of our eggs in the same basket. Okay, I'm totally against that. Reparations can't be a black lottery. Okay, reparations can't be the Pan-African lotto. Okay, meaning that our focus. Too much of our focus will be on reparations as opposed to economic empowerment, political empowerment, pushing our agendas, etc. I'm all for reparations, but that can't be a silver bullet. Okay? That can't be what we hang all of our hopes and dreams on. Okay? It can't be on reparations, because there's a good chance you're going to be disappointed. All right? But when you see these articles like this, right, dealing with reparations, especially from white news sources, Look in the comments section on Facebook. Look at the comments, okay, that people are making. And that gives you an idea of what is to come. And that gives you an idea of why America needs a massive history lesson. All right, these are just all articles right here. This is just a stack of articles on my desk. These are articles over here in Firefold. Now, this is just a stack of articles on my desk right here. Because I just saw that damn stack and I thought I pulled it out or something. But, you know, it's not bugging me. Okay. All right. Because I was just looking and I just saw it. All right. But anyway. Okay. So, this is why all of this is interconnected and interrelated. But check out the book, How White Folks Got So Rich, The Untold Story of American White Supremacy. How White Folks Got So Rich, The Untold Story of American White Supremacy. This is the third edition. So on page 71, it talks about the Homestead Act. And it says the Homestead Act is probably the most rewarding affirmative action program American whites have ever given themselves. Beginning in 1865, the Homestead Act actually goes back to 1862, however. 250 million acres of land, nearly the size of California and Texas combined, were given away to whites, many of whom had actually participated in the Southern Confederate Rebellion against America. Okay? Blacks who had worked this land for generations as enslaved Africans and fought for America in the Union Army during the Civil War, and also fought during the American Revolutionary War, for that matter, were not allowed to receive any of it. Okay, so that there were maybe one or two cases where African Americans got land, but overwhelmingly we were locked out of this. Okay, as many as 640 free acres for each white family, an acre being about the size of a football field, and 640 acres about being one square mile, were simply snatched from Native Indians and given to whites, okay, given to white families. Then you have the Southern Homestead Act of 1866 that opened up 46 million acres of land in five Southern states, okay, for the millions of ex-slaves and Union veterans, but only about 1,000 African Americans ever received title to the land. That's the Southern Homestead Act, okay? And they, let me see, was it in this one here? But I saw one estimate, and I think it was in this book here, that of those land giveaways, about 400,000 to 600,000 white families still own that land today. Okay, handed down generation to generation. All right, so all this ties into the wealth gap. So when we look at the article from the Washington Post, and everybody share this broadcast on your Facebook page, invite your friends to tune in. How's everybody doing? Okay. I'm Michael Imhotep, founder of the African History Network, host of the African History Network show, a talk show host, researcher, lecturer, and writer. An African-American business owner is posting the name of your business here on the thread of the broadcast. We'll let you know how you can advertise with the African History Network. Email us at customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. And we have a special promotion right now. Get 1 month for the price of three. And we take your 30-second to 60-second commercial and put it into the audio podcast of our radio show, the African History Network show, that I do Sundays, and broadcasts we do throughout the week also. All right, each episode we get thousands of listeners. We have listeners across the country. I've been doing the African History Network show 9 years. March 10th was our 10-year anniversary. Okay, and we have David, we have Tim, Adrian, just a few of the people watching on Facebook. All right, so if we look at this article from Washington Post, a new explanation for the stubborn persistence of the racial wealth gap, okay? They talk about how as of 2016, the average African-American family had a net worth of $17,100, roughly one-tenth of the average white family, which is $171,000. Now, economists tend to trace the staggering divide to the nation's long history of, he said, bigotry, but it's actually racism against African Americans, starting with slavery. He got that right, starting with slavery, 246 years of slavery. But decades of discrimination after the Civil War played a role, too, from the overt racism of Jim Crow laws to the more subtle forms of bias built into the New Deal. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was a Democrat, but the policies from the New Deal, the GI Bill, which was created in 1944, the Federal Housing Administration, which was created in 1934, the Homeowners Loan Corporation, created in 1933, which created the redlining system, which was used by insurance companies and banks to label areas, high-risk areas, they just so happened to be mostly in the African-American community, and good investments in white areas, especially in the white suburbs that are going to be built after the World War II ends, and that comes out of the Federal Housing Act of 1947, which allows white people to put 3% down on low-interest loans and get homes built out in the suburbs. When African Americans try to take advantage of this, we're locked out of that. We're denied those loans, and when we try to use the Federal Housing Act to buy property in the African-American community, it was labeled as high-risk areas based upon the redlining system created by the Homeowners Loan Corporation in 1933. All this deals with government policy. All of this deals with government policy, okay? So we have to understand this. All right, so the New Deal, the GI Bill, and many of the nation's economic and criminal justice policies in the 20th century. But there's less agreement on the exact mechanisms by which these policies contributed to such disparate financial outcomes. Some economists say it comes down to inheritance, that's accumulated wealth, how do they accumulate the wealth, which allows families to build on the gains of preceding generations. Other researchers contend the difference can be found in the types of financial assets by black and white families, okay? But all this comes out of white supremacy and racism. And then we also have to deal with how African Americans historically have been discriminated against by unions. So when you read How White Folks Got So Rich, The Untold Story of American White Supremacy, and there's other information on this, after the Civil War ends in 1865, right after that you have large labor unions created, like the National Labor Union was created in 1866. These labor unions were created to protect jobs for white men, and lock African Americans out of these jobs they have been doing for 246 years. Why? Because there were at least 262 skills, trades, and crafts, that African people had in this country from 1619 to 1865, okay? Now, it is true, of course, you've heard me talk about this before. It is true we've been in this country going back at least 51,700 years, and we can look at the book from Dr. David Imhotep, The First Americans Were Africans, Documented Evidence, this book here. His book thoroughly documents an African presence in this country going back at least 51,700 years ago, even before Native Americans came into existence. African people, all the original Native Americans. And you're dealing with the Khoisan, who come from southern Africa. They're the ancestors to the Ainu and the Twa. And they go all around the world, have the oldest DNA on the planet. This does not mean the transatlantic slave trade did not happen or anything like that. The transatlantic slave trade does happen. But we come from Africa tens of thousands of years before we were told we came from Africa. Okay, the migrations start much earlier. Okay, so we're dealing with understanding the effects of a sequence of historical events, but there were at least 262 skills, trades, and crafts that African people had in this country from 1619 to 1865 in the book by James Lewis, I think it is, The Other Slaves, Artisans, Craftsmen, but it's called The Other Slaves. And it documents all these skills, trades, and crafts that we had in this country. So while we were working for free, it was all right. We can be the blacksmiths, we can be the barrel makers, the anchor makers, engineers, beer makers, hemp baggers. There were all these skills that we had. When slavery ends and 4 million enslaved Africans are freed, now we can compete for wages. Now you have these white labor unions created, and they're locking African Americans out of these jobs that we did for free, and they're protecting these jobs for white men, and they're also allowing white immigrants coming to this country to join the unions and get these jobs as well. So from 1865 to 1880 or so, somewhere around there, there were about 12 million European immigrants who came to this country. A lot of the jobs that they got should have gone to African Americans, because we were here already. We were doing the jobs, and our skills were as good as white people, in many cases better. All right, so all this ties into this history. All this ties into our conditions. All right, so check out this article from the Washington Post, a new explanation for the stubborn persistence of the racial wealth gap. Okay, this is from March 14th, 2019. Okay, so this is an article that just came out. All right, let's continue here. And I'm not sure why I wasn't finding those main articles I was looking for, but they'll come up, they'll turn up like right after I finish the broadcast. I know it. Oh, you know what? I think it's in this stack here. I think that's why I couldn't find it, because I was going to talk about it on my show. Yeah, here it is here. That's why I couldn't find it. It's in the new stack. Okay. It's in a new stack of articles. I know I just saw it. All right. American schools can't figure out how to teach kids about slavery. American school. Now, this is from Vox.com. American schools can't figure out how to teach kids about slavery. So when we talk about reparations, we must understand that there's going to be there's going to have to be a massive re-education of the American populace. Because if all you have to do is look at the fight over Confederate monuments. And most people don't understand that Confederate monuments were erected, number one, after the Civil War ended. Two, largely erected to terrorize African Americans and to keep us in a subservient, low place in society. Okay? When you see people run around with what they call the Confederate flag, that's not the Confederate flag. That's the Confederate battle flag of Northern Virginia under General Robert E. Lee's army. That flag never flew over the Confederate States of America. So all you have to do is just look at, you just listen to what a lot of these people say. You can tell they have no understanding of history. There were three flags that flew over the Confederate States of America from 1861 to 1865. That flag that's on the General Lee car on the Dukes of Hazzard, that flag was never one of those flags. That flag is not the Confederate flag. That's the Confederate battle flag of Northern Virginia under General Robert E. Lee's army. That flag, however, became popular once again in about 1948 because the Democratic Party pushed a for the presidential election, 48 presidential election. The Democratic Party pushed a more pro-civil rights agenda, okay? And this caused a backlash against the Southern Democrats known as the Dixiecrats. So Strom Thurmond, who died a Republican but was a Dixiecrat, a segregationist, obstructionist Dixiecrat, Strom Thurmond ran for president as a Dixiecrat, and they brought back out that Confederate battle flag as a symbol of opposition to the civil rights movement. This is in 48, 47, 48. As you go further into the 50s and you go into the civil rights movement, you go into Brown versus Board of Education, the decision May 12, 1954. You go into the Montgomery bus boycott, which starts December 5th, 1955. You see a rise in the usage of that Confederate battle flag as a symbol of white supremacy and racism and a symbol of opposition to the civil rights movement. And this continued, okay? And then we see in 1961, which is the 100th year anniversary of the beginning of the U.S. Civil War, which started April 12th. It started April 12, 1861. We see in 1961, we see the state of South Carolina put that Confederate battle flag on the state's capitol, on the dome of the state's capitol building, because South Carolina was the first state to secede from the Union. And they seceded from the Union December 20th, 1860. And so we see the Civil War start in 1861, right? All right, so all this history is connected. Okay, so African-American business owners, share the name of your business, post the name of your business here on the thread of the broadcast. Also, visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. You can register for the online courses that I teach there. We have them all on demand. We have a 10-course online bundle pack, which includes Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach you in school. That's a 14-hour, 7-session online course that I teach. We deal with thousands of years of history. That 10-course online bundle pack is on sale right now, $40, regularly $130, okay? We're going to continue here. And then email us at customer service at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, customer service at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. Email us there. African American business owners will let you know how you can advertise with the African History Network also, okay? And we'll post some more of this information after we finish broadcasting. All right, so we know that even though they talk about Women's Equal Pay Day, April 2nd, 2019. We know it takes African American women until August of this year to make the same amount of money that the average white male made the previous 12 months. Okay? And we see that African American women are creating businesses at 6 times the national average as well. Okay? If you look at the article from blackenterprise.com, Black women business owners outpace all other startups 6 times national average. You've heard me talk about this before, but this is true. So we see that if we look at the 2015 State of Women-Owned Businesses report commissioned by American Express Open, they found that minority-owned women increased from 1 in 6 in 1997 to 1 in 3 in 2015, minority-owned businesses by women, okay? Minority businesses owned by quote-unquote minority women. When they break it down by race, they found that African-American women ownership of businesses grew 322%, okay? The non-minority women-owned businesses grew 40% over that 18 period of time, but black women owned businesses grew 322%. Okay, So we see black women are creating businesses at 6 times the national average, all right? I think we're going to start broadcasting here. My battery's running low. Visit AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. Email us customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. You can also donate to the African History Network, paypal.me/the AHN show. We'll post this full video later because I'm recording it on my video camera also, okay? Post your comments here and we'll answer your comments offline. But African-American women can't wait 106 years to get equal pay. All of this is connected. And these are issues we need to push to all of the presidential candidates as well. Getting equal pay for African-American women. Reparations is just part of it, okay? Funding for African-American-owned businesses, all right? These all deal with public policy. All right, so we'll talk to you all later, and we'll keep broadcasting here. All right, so let's keep broadcasting here, recording with my video camera as well. All right, so we have the article from BlackEnterprise.com. Black women business owners outpace all other startups 6 times national average. Okay, 6 times national average. And this is by Carolyn M. Brown, March 4th, 2016. So we see that Hispanic-owned firms, women-owned Hispanic firms grew 224%. Women in general now own 30% of all businesses in the U.S., accounting for some 9.4 million businesses. We see that African-American businesses now are a little over probably 3 million. And African-American women-owned businesses account for 1.3 million of the total businesses owned by African-Americans. So African-American women own 1.3 million businesses, okay? All right, so you have more and more African-American women turning to entrepreneurship, even though they may still continue to work a 9-to-5 job, but they are turning to entrepreneurship to make more money, and some of them will transition eventually once their business can afford to pay them a decent salary, etc. But they'll transition to entrepreneurship only and leave their 9-to-5 job, okay? All right. Let's see here. Okay, so now if we look at the article from Vox.com, and this deals with Tuesday is Black Women's Equal Pay Day. Here's what you should know about the gap. Now, this was an article. This came out August 7th, 2018. I talked about it when it came out, and like I said earlier, I've dealt with this in some of my presentations, especially when I was speaking in San Diego. August of 2018. Okay, and okay, so full presentation coming soon. And we'll answer some of the comments here. All right, let's continue here. Okay. So, on average, black women had to work 20 months to match what a white man made in 12 months. So, they have a lot of good information here in this article from Vox.com, V-O-X. And something I want to hone in on. So, they talk about nationally African-American women working full-time in full-time year-round positions make 63 cents to each dollar earned by a white man. Okay? Now, this gap is much wider than the 79 cents that white women earn for every dollar that the average white man makes, and 87 cents earned by Asian women. But again, there is significant variation among different nationalities of Asian women, with some earning far less than this average. Because when you talk about Asians, you're talking about people coming from at least 20 different countries, okay? This is why when people try to make the argument that, if black people just did what Asians did, then, you know, they would be successful. First of all, one of the reasons why Asian Americans are successful, number one, they weren't stripped of their history, their language, their culture, okay, first of all. Secondly, Washington Post has articles dealing with this, but what happened was the way that America perceived and acted and treated Asian Americans, that largely changed over time, okay, which allowed them to assimilate, which allowed them to rise, okay? So these are dynamics that people don't want to talk about, all right? Washington Post had two articles dealing with this. One of them, and it probably has the other article referenced in it, one of them is called "The Real Reason the U.S. Became Less Racist Toward Asian Americans." The real reason the U.S. became less racist toward Asian Americans, okay? So check out that article. That's written by Jeff Guo, G-U-O. Okay, that's from November 29, 2016. There was another one. There was another one that the Washington Post had. The real secret to Asian American success was not education. The real secret to Asian American success was not education. That was the second article that they had. Check those out. This all ties into history, okay? And we have to understand that what you do for yourself, what you do to yourself, and what you allow other people to do to you and get away with is based upon what you think about yourself. What you think about yourself is based upon what you have been taught about yourself. What you've been taught about yourself is based upon everything you've read, heard, and seen about yourself. So we have to understand the impact that history, public policy, laws, all this has on the way things are today. And also, the way the history is taught impacts the way we perceive how things are happening today as well, and what needs to be changed and what needs to stay the same also. Okay? So all this is extremely, extremely important. All right, so when we go back to the article from Vox.com, the National Women's Law Center notes that this gap, and I have it here also on the computer, that this gap can begin to widen over the course of a black woman's career, okay, causing her to lose nearly $870,000 in potential earnings to the wage gap. And in several states, the wage gap can be even bigger. In Louisiana, for example, black women make less than half of what white men make, okay? And I'm going to see if I can pull up the article from AtlantaBlackStar.com, because there was one that I had from AtlantaBlackStar.com that dealt with this also. And that was from... that was from either 2015 or 2016 from AtlantaBlackStar.com. Just try to Google that. Okay, I think I have it here. We'll pull that up. All right, so now the gap between African American women's pay is due to several factors, according to Vox.com. A 2014 report. All right. It's an email about my daughter. Okay. She's sleeping. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Okay. A 2014 report from the National Women's Law Center notes that women comprise some two-thirds of workers making $10.10 an hour or less. Okay. So in general, women comprise two-thirds of workers making $10.10 an hour or less. And of that group, okay, of that two-thirds, nearly half of that two-thirds are women of color, making $10.10 an hour or less. Okay, nearly half of that two-thirds of employees that make $10.10 an hour or less, nearly half of that group are women of color. African-American women were overrepresented in the low-wage workforce, according to the National Women's Law Center, making up 10% of low-wage workers, but only 6% of the overall workforce. So African-American women make up 6% of the overall workforce, but 10% of low-wage workers, okay? Even so, the wage gap between African-American women and white men can't be fully accounted for by differences in occupation or education. The gap opens up early. On average, African-American women college graduates make 37% less than white male than white males with the same level of education. And black women are saddled with far more student loan debt than their white peers, according to research from the American Association of University Women. Black women with more education don't just struggle to access many of the higher paying positions available to their white counterparts. They earn less than white men and women holding the same job, whether the job is part-time as a cashier or a salary position as a business executive. Let me repeat this. African-American women with more education don't just struggle to access many of the higher paying positions available to their white counterparts. They earn less than white men and women holding the same job, whether the job is part-time as a cashier or a salary position as a business executive. Now, in some geographic areas, the gap is even wider. A recent report on the wage gap for African-American women living in New York City found that black women make roughly 57 cents for every dollar earned by a white man, a gap that is larger than both the national gap and the gap seen in the state of New York. Okay, so you can read the article in its entirety, and let's see here. All right, so you can read the article in its entirety. There's a lot more to get to, but this is why public policy is so important. This is why equal pay for equal work is so important. This is why discrimination lawsuits are so important as well. Okay. Now, I found the article from AtlantaBlackStar.com. This is from August 23rd, 2016. America's pay gap costs African-American women over $1 million in lost wages. America's pay gap costs African-American women over $1 million in lost wages. And it talks about, let's see here. It talks about, according to the report from National Women's Law Center. A recent report by the National Women's Law Center found that African American women are slated to lose more than $877,000 over a 40-year career compared to their white male counterparts. So, $877,000 over a 40-year working career. This impacts where you live. Your zip code impacts the quality of schools largely your children go to. The quality of schools your children go to impact largely the colleges they go to, which impacts the type of careers that they have, which impacts where they live, which impacts where their children go to school. Okay, this impacts this can largely impact your credit score. When you have a higher credit score, you can get lower interest rates on mortgages, car loans, which impacts your overall financial makeup. This impacts your ability to buy real estate, to pass on to your family, real estate to generate revenue. This impacts your ability to invest in businesses, stock plans, 401k, etc. So this is huge. This is huge. A recent report by the National Women's Law Center found that African-American women are slated to lose more than $877,000 over a 40-year career compared to their white counterparts. quote, African-American women shouldn't need more work. African-American women shouldn't need to work more than 66 years to earn what a white man earns in 40 years, said Emily Martin, Vice President for Workplace Justice at the National Women's Law Center. Quote, if we don't act now, this was in 2016, if we don't act now to ensure equal pay for many women of color, the cost of the lifetime wage gap will surpass $1 million. The cost of the lifetime wage gap will surpass $1 million. We literally can't afford to ignore this, end quote. Now, I'm for equal pay for equal work, period. Whether it's African-American woman, Asian woman, Hispanic woman, African-American man, of course. I'm an African-American man. I'm for equal pay for equal work, period, across the board, okay? But I'm speaking specifically dealing with African-American women. The reason why is because the National Equal Pay Day was April 2nd, and this is what we started out talking about, and that's focusing on women, but it's focusing largely on white women. Black Women's Equal Pay Day is coming up in August, okay? All right, so according to the report titled The Lifetime Wage Gap by State for African-American Women, the wage gap for black women in six states has already surpassed $1 million. In the District of Columbia, African-American women could stand to lose roughly $1.5 million. This is over that 40-year working career. In New Jersey, $1.2 million, $1.1 million in Connecticut, $1.1 million in Louisiana, $1,046,000 in California, and $1,022,000 in Massachusetts. So this is over that 40-year working career. This is the wage gap that African-American women suffer from in these states, okay? So you have five states, back based upon the 2016 report, you have five states where the wage gap for African-American women was $1 million or more over their 40-year working career. What could you do with an extra $1 million over the course of 40 years working that you earned? We're not talking about hitting the lotto or the lottery. We're talking about what you earned. So this can lift millions of African Americans. When we correct this wage gap, this lifts millions of African Americans out of poverty and their families out of poverty. This changes the zip codes that they live in. Okay? So this is extremely important. And these are issues that need to be presented to the candidates, not just the Democratic candidates, also the Republicans as well. African-American women with a bachelor's degree typically make $46,825 per year, only $1,849 more than white men with only a high school degree, according to the report from the National Women's Law Center. Okay, so check out this article from AtlantaBlackStar.com. America's pay gap costs African-American women over $1 million in lost wages. All right. Okay, so African-American business owners, hey, post the name of your business here on the thread of the broadcast, and whether it's on Facebook or YouTube, email us at customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We'll let you know how you can advertise with the African History Network. We take your 30-second to 60-second commercial, put it into the audio podcast of our shows, the African History Network show that we do on Sunday nights. I've been doing that show for 9 years. And we have over 900 audio podcasts on Blog Talk Radio, but we're on 8 different podcast platforms, not just Blog Talk. We're on iTunes, CastBox, Acast, FM Player, TuneIn, Stitcher. So wherever you get your podcast from, search for the African History Network show. And if you don't have a commercial, we can create one for you, no additional charge. But our special promotion right now is get 3 months for the price of one. Email us at customerservice@africanhistorynetwork.com. We can help your business grow. We can help you get new customers. And so if you are an African-American book author, if you have an event coming up you want to promote, if you have an e-commerce store, you sell clothing online, you sell jewelry, whatever it is, or if you have a brick and mortar store, because we have listeners all across the country, we can definitely help you, and we can help support you with our Facebook fan page, the African History Network, as well. Email us at customerservice@africanhistorynetwork.com, customerservice@africanhistorynetwork.com. We can get you started today. All right, so pay close attention to what the candidates are saying. Pay close attention to their policies. And keep in mind, at this early stage of the campaign, usually candidates don't have very well thought out detailed plans this early. They have broad general plans, okay? But this is why it's important during this period of time for African Americans and our various organizations to put together comprehensive African-American agendas, so we can push these issues to the candidates. We have standards to hold the candidates to, and our organizations should be having meetings with these candidates, pushing our agendas to them, finding out where they stand on the issues also, okay? This is very important, so it doesn't come down to personality. And we should be pushing our issues and our agendas to the Republican candidates as well. We know that back in March of 2017, the Congressional Black Caucus leadership met with Donald Trump and his team, the Donald Trump administration. They presented a 125-page agenda called We Have a Lot to Lose, We Have a Lot to Lose. It's a fantastic agenda. And, you know, I'm a friend of Dr. Claude Anderson. Dr. Claude Anderson is one of my teachers. Powernomics is an excellent book. The elements we could take from Powernomics to put together a very reasonable African-American agenda, but we need to present it to all the candidates. We need to present it before the election. Now, it's important to understand, they're not going to agree to everything. No candidate in general, if you present 20 policies, most of the time a candidate is not going to agree to all 20. But you have to go and you have to see whose policies best match up with yours. Who can you get the most from, and who has the best chance of winning? Okay, putting off back in somebody who's only polling at 1 or 2% doesn't make sense. That's a wasted vote. Who has the best chance of winning? But also, who can create the environment through their bully pulpit? Who can create the environment for you to push your issues and agenda the farthest and get the most accomplished after the election? And also, who is going to protect the policies that are already in existence that benefit you? So we have to understand political self-defense. Who's going to protect those gains that we've made? Who's going to protect those policies already in place? Who's going to reverse the damage that Trump has made in reversing policies from the Obama administration? Who's going to put those policies back in place? Who's going to do those executive orders to reverse the executive orders Trump has put in place? So we have to understand how all of this intersects, how all this comes together. We have to understand all of these dynamics, okay? All right, so follow us on our Facebook fan page, the African History Network. Turn on the notifications so you know when we go live. Follow us on our YouTube channel, Michael Imhotep, I-M-H-O-T-E-P. Click on the bell so it lets you know when we upload new videos or go live. Subscribe to us as well. Follow us on our Twitter page, The AHN Show, The AHN Show on Twitter, and Michael Imhotep, I-M-H-O-T-E-P, on Instagram. Listen to the African History Network show every Sunday, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, on 9:10 a.m. The Superstation, the Future of Radio. But we have the podcast at our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, and we're on 8 different podcast platforms also. So wherever you get your podcast from, search for the African History Network show. Okay, remember, at the African History Network, we focus on educating, empowering, and inspiring people of African descent throughout the diaspora and around the world, because right now it corrects wrong behavior. What you do for yourself, what you do to yourself, and what you allow other people to do to you and get away with is based upon what you think about yourself. What you think about yourself is based upon what you have been taught about yourself. What you've been taught about yourself is based upon everything you've read, heard, and seen about yourself, okay? And people may be looking at my shirt. You know, I'm wearing my Colin Kaepernick shirt. I'm not going to stand for a flag that oppresses black people and people of color. That was the actual quote that he said. Okay, it cut off some of the quote, but his actual quote was, I'm not going to stand for a flag that oppresses black people and people of color. That was the full quote. All right, so remember, right now is correct, wrong behavior is not over till we win. Wakanda forever. We'll talk to you next time. Peace.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.